As the war in Iraq stretches into its fifth year, a growing number of returning veterans are speaking out, arguing that the U.S. government has subjected American soldiers and Iraqi civilians to unjust and illegal policies. With me now is Sergeant Mathis Chereau, who was stop-lost but has refused to return to active duty, and Captain Luis Carlos Montalvan, who served 2 years in Iraq before resigning last year. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Leonard. It's nice to be here.
Hi, Luis.
It's a real honor to be here. Thank you.
And now that you've left the military, Luis, have you been finding it hard to adjust to civilian life?
I have. That's a great question. As so many hundreds of thousands of veterans having to cope with the nightmare bureaucratic inertia of the Veterans Administration, in addition to the maladies and the injuries and the wounds that that go along with going to war.
But you'd also been in the military for 17 years. It was your only way of life for a long time.
That's right.
Now, Mathis, you're involved in a stop-loss controversy. How does stop-loss work?
Well, basically, Leonard, because of a state of emergency declared on September 14th, 2001, Presidential Proclamation 7463, the justification has been made that because of imminent threats to the United States, because right now as we sit here, our country is in a state of national emergency, that the president should have the authority to call members of the individual ready reserves, or as I like to say it, draft veterans back into the service to prosecute a war in Iraq that actually has nothing to do with the state of emergency here in the States. And this was a big misconception a lot of people have, that the president has these powers because there's a state of war in Iraq. And in fact, since there was never a state of war declared, he's using this proclamation of national emergency from 2001, and that's been what he's used to call back 15,000.
Has stop-loss ever been employed in previous conflicts?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a large number of folks who were called back to active duty from the individual ready reserve during the first Gulf War, and in fact, we saw a large resistance to that then as well.
Hadn't you already been honorably discharged when you were told that you would need to redeploy on June 15th, Father's Day?
June 15th, Father's Day, that's right.
You had been discharged. Weren't you officially out of the military?
Well, the way it works, Leonard, is when everybody enlists into the Army, they sign up for 8 years, but they choose what their initial active service obligation is, and I chose 5, which is actually about one longer than people usually do. So I did 5 years on active duty, more than 4 of those spent in overseas locations. And I was honorably discharged July 31st, 2007.
So did you expect to be redeployed? You knew you had three more years' commitment.
It's a reality to every soldier in the Army that when I get out, so to speak, I'm not necessarily safe. I guess the different route that I took is questioning the legality of the whole thing. I mean, at the core of it, I see Iraq, or the occupation thereof, of that sovereign nation, is inherently illegal and inherently immoral and built on lies. And in addition to that, I don't feel the president has the right to call back soldiers of the IRR because of a proclamation he made September 14th of a state of national emergency.
Did you feel that way about the war and the occupation before you went to Iraq, or is that something you came to while you were there?
Well, I was never in Iraq, Leonard. I was in the Army for 5 years, and by nothing.
You were in the Philippines.
I was in the Philippines. I was in Afghanistan, Germany, Japan, Italy, Poland, all over the place. But they never asked me to go to Iraq, and that is by nothing more than good fortune. But that makes me no less qualified to uphold the duty that I have as set forth in the UCMJ to decide between lawful and unlawful orders. And if Iraq is indeed illegal, as the members of the Out of Iraq Caucus in the House say it is, and as more than half of the people in this country say it is in turn an illegal order to deploy there.
In your case, Luis, you were in Iraq, weren't you?
Yes, most definitely.
And you had risen to the rank of captain, so you had made a major commitment to the military. What led you to join in the first place?
Well, that's a great question. Every young boy, I always gravitated toward kind of a warrior ethos. It's hard to really describe. My parents, my father. was born here, but raised in Cuba. And in 1569-60, when Castro took over, his mother and family fled Cuba, and subsequently, as a result, I've always grown up with a sense of a great deal of American patriotism and the desire to serve our nation honorably. And so that passion led me into the Army, and it grew over the years, and you know, in that way.
Well, were there things that you saw in Iraq that you that made you start to question the occupation and your service?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I was there in 2003 to 2004, and then 2005 to 2006. And while there, initially, there was a great deal of optimism, despite the fact that there were murmurs, and I heard from the previous guests, you know, discussing journalistic integrity or the lack thereof.
You're studying journalism right now, aren't you?
That's right. I'm working on my grad degree at Columbia in journalism.
So, yeah, I'm sure you've thought a lot about how the war was covered.
Absolutely. And if you ever talk about that subject again, I'd love to approach it. But what I saw during my first tour was were opportunities that were squandered. You know, I banged my drum about to my superiors regarding the need for more personnel and resources to accomplish seemingly an impossible mission. Wrote countless memoranda without response, without reply, and was extraordinarily frustrated with that. And I saw some terrible things happen, and I was worried as I left in 2004. And then upon returning in 2005. I was absolutely flabbergasted at the backward momentum due to the incompetence, dereliction of duty, careerism of the generals and the colonels who had, who had just not done what they were supposed to do, which is to take care of soldiers and accomplish the mission and speak candidly and honestly about what our needs were. Which has led us to this point now, where Iraq is in civil war, and the region it's broken out into a regional conflict. And
well, you were a captain, which is a fairly high rank, and you're making it sound like you had absolutely no input.
My counterparts, in Iraq had a very unusual time as an officer. I did things that a lot of captains typically don't do. My counterparts were typically colonels because I had a number of roles while there. I worked for a very honorable guy named Colonel, soon to be General McMaster, who of course wrote the book Dereliction of Duty, which is a classic, and I urge all your listeners to read that book. But I could not believe I could tell you stories ad nauseum about just how negligent, just how incompetent, and just how corrupt a number of these colonels and generals were, and I have evidence of it, which is why I testified before the Progressive Democratic Caucus, along with some other members of Veterans Against the War, about a month ago or so.
That was Maxine Waters' group?
Yes, and we hope, and I hope to God, and I pray that, as do the other members of various veterans groups, that we are able to testify under oath in front of a committee, an actual congressional committee, as to our experiences and the evidence and testimony that we have to share to the American public that reflects the reality that is not being shown in the media and by our leaders.
My guests are Captain Luis Carlos Montalban and Sergeant Mathis Chereau. We're talking about the current situation with returned veterans. in vis-a-vis Iraq. In the case of in your case, Mathis, even though you have you're wearing a shirt that says Iraq Veterans Against the War, and you've joined the organization, you never served in Iraq.
Absolutely not. They tried to send me, and I told them no.
Now, is that have you been charged with anything by the military since you were honorably discharged? Can they call you AWOL if you resist redeployment?
Well, there's a number of legal technicalities around that. Yes, I absolutely do face potential prosecution. I was ordered to report about 2.5 weeks ago, and since I have not heard from the military, honestly, I'm waiting for them to come get me whenever they're ready. As I said when I made this initial announcement, as I said on the day I was supposed to report to duty, I don't feel anything I'm doing is a crime or anything to be ashamed of, and I refuse to act as such. So I said I won't go to Iraq. I think it's illegal. I think it's unconstitutional, and it is my duty, according to my oath of enlistment, to stand by the U.S. Constitution, and now I'm waiting. If they come after me and charge me, I will be thrilled to have my day in court and make my arguments as to why soldiers refusing deployment to Iraq is highly legitimate.
Well, you also have another argument that you spent 5 years doing what you were told to do in the military and you were honorably discharged. It might be different if you had just recently joined the military and were told to go to Iraq and said, no, I don't want to go.
Well, my perspective may would have been different, Leonard, but fundamentally it is not. Fundamentally, people refusing to deploy to Iraq, deciding for themselves as they're required to between lawful and unlawful, is required by the UCMJ, and my actions are in keeping, I believe, with not just the Constitution but federal. I'm trying to uphold the law while our leaders are asking us to forsake it to pursue an illegal occupation that needs to end immediately.
Luis, would you have resigned if you hadn't been wounded in Iraq?
I did resign because for reasons other than just having been wounded. I resigned because I no longer had army that I knew and loved, the army that I spent more than half of my life in, despite the fact that I love my brothers and sisters who I've served with. Our leaders have forsaken us. Our military leaders have forsaken us. They continue to forsake us, using the language that Mathis, said so eloquently. I could no longer... after writing some articles that were published, I was essentially given a gag order at Fort Benning, Georgia, I felt compelled to leave the military so as to be able to pursue what we're doing right now, which is articulating the truth and to try to contribute to, what the discussions and the accountability that need to happen.
Are you willing to talk about what happened to you when you were wounded and the extent of your injuries?
I'll do so. I appreciate your asking me that in such a considerate way. I sustained various wounds. I have 3 fractured vertebra. I was lacerated by the knives of some assassins who tried to kill me while I was in charge of a key border crossing point between the Syrian and Iraqi border. I have post-traumatic stress. I'm being tested for traumatic brain injury, mild traumatic brain injury. I have some leg problems and some Gulf War related weird stuff like irritable bowel syndrome and skin rashes that I've never had since I returned from Iraq. I'm dealing with those issues with therapy and with the brotherhood and fellowship of veterans like Mathis and counseling. And sadly, the Veterans Administration, I'm probably going to sue the Veterans Administration because they are absolutely obstructionists. I think the best word to describe the Veterans Administration or Veterans Affairs, Department of Veterans Affairs, I should say, is that they are obstructionists.
Well, we heard about problems at Walter Reed for returning wounded, but supposedly that has all been cleaned up.
Yeah, supposedly. I heard from a friend of mine that if you go to Walter Reed, who works at Walter Reed, he's a surgeon. He's a family practitioner and a psychologist. Most of the faculty, i.e. the service members, civilian and military, do not believe in the war. Walter Reed is an Army hospital. It does tend to some veterans, but it's a military hospital, which is different than, you know, the VA system, obviously. Walter Reed is, you know, has been cleaned up a little bit. I think if more, you know, investigative reporting were done, I think you'd see a number of faults that remain. And the Dole Shalala Commission that came out as a result of that, this administration has sadly done almost nothing to address that commission's recommendations.
Now, the both of you have joined Iraq Veterans Against the War. That's a major leap, isn't it, Mathis? It's one thing to have personal opposition. It's another thing for somebody who was a sergeant to actually join a group that is against a war the United States is currently engaged in.
Well, as a human being, Leonard, and as a veteran, it is extraordinarily healthy to feel solidarity with a brother and sisterhood that has gone through very much the same thing as I have. And the fact of the matter is, IVAW, I am so honored to be a member of. It is full of some of the most intelligent and honest and poignantly worded people that I have ever met in my life. In fact, my best friend, Christopher Goldsmith, I wouldn't have met if it wasn't for IVAW. I would have gladly joined in 2004 when they started, but unfortunately I never knew about the group's existence until after I got out of the Army.
Now, Luis is studying journalism at Columbia. You're going to Brooklyn College. What are you going to major in?
Well, I'm not really sure yet. I've only got one semester under my belt. I'm almost 25, and I've got no school because I've been so busy serving the country. And now, in turn, fighting this illegal call-up to deploy to Iraq.
Are you afraid you might be imprisoned?
I am certainly concerned and not nervous, but like I said, I refuse to be afraid. I feel that what I'm doing is absolutely legal and in keeping with the higher ideals of the United States and its military.
We've run out of time, but I want to thank you both so much and wish you good luck in your futures. Sergeant Mathis Chereau and Captain Luis Carlos Montalvan, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you,
Leonard. Leonard, likewise.